Hello, and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of January 2019. I'm your host, Robert, and I am so glad this month is over with already. And with me, I have...
Hail Satan... Wait. Satan... I'll come back to this.
And...
Ugh, man, January don't make me sleepy. I need to... That's what I'm trying to do is do this. Make sure you get there. Oh, I didn't need to do shit. It's just like that, man. It's like, fuck the shit, motherfucker.
Yeah, isn't that always what it is? Like, you know, we pretty much do all our year-end reflections across December at varying intervals. Then January starts, and we're still kind of in that mood because, you know, that's when award season is dishing out all their nominations and whatnot. The year really doesn't get started until February, at the very least.
Yeah.
It's kind of like an old lawnmower in that regard.
Oh, lawnmower.
That's a weird metaphor. I'm starting to feel like a dad.
How are you the dad? Wait, are you the dad? That's the scary thought.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about it. I'm the one that drinks the most, so I'm the dad by default.
Yeah. At least your liver thinks so.
Yes. Wait, what liver?
Might want to go see a doctor about that.
Nah, I think they're sick of seeing me. They keep telling me, oh, you gotta, you know, lay off the beers, you gotta exercise, and you gotta stop drinking toxic waste in hopes that you'll get superpowers. What do they know? I'll be the next Spider-Man someday.
We ain't on soundtrack, though.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, I already have a soundtrack by Post Malone, so, you know, I'm already halfway there. But yeah, so we're covering January 2019, and while we kid around about, you know, kind of being a media dead zone, there were still things that technically came out this year. Well, I mean, this month, rather, so let's actually just run through some of those things. So let's start off right at the top with the rock, indie, and folk releases from the past month. Starting at the top, we had the newest album from Swerve Driver with Future Ruins. We had Deer Hunter with Why Hasn't Everything Already Disappeared. There was a new project from the Neil Morse Band with The Great Adventure. There was a surprise drop from Rivers Cuomo and Company, Weezer, with their Teal album, which means we still got to deal with the Black album in a couple months. And last, although probably certainly least, the newest Bring Me the Horizon project, Amo, or Amo. I think he pronounces it like Amo in that one song. Anyway. Moving on to the realm of metal and hardcore, we have the newest project from Swallow the Sun, When a Shadow is Forced into the Light. We have the debut album from Screamo act Wristmeat Razor with Misery Never Forgets. Sumerians Born of Osiris returns with the Simulation. King 810 reminding us that they probably shouldn't be allowed to make music with Suicide King. A new project from Lilike with Memory Lies. Malevolent Creation returning with their newest album, The 13th Beast. Papa Roach, apparently still a thing, with Who Do You Trust? Of course, Fever 333 with their debut full-length Strength in Numbers. And Soilwork with their latest album, Verkleiatin. Now into the realm of hip-hop and R&B, we got the newest album from Watsky with Complaint. You remember him? He's the white guy that raps really fast in some of those epic rap battles of history videos. You know the ones. We got a new mixtape from Chief Keef with The Leak Volume 7. A collaborative project from Wife is Funeral and Rob Banks with Connected, and the E's are replaced with 3's. We have the debut self-titled album from Malibu Ken, that is the duo of Aesop Rock and Tobacco. The latest full-length album from Dawn with New Breed. And, of course, Future's newest album, The Wizard. You know, yeah, without an A, because reasons...
Or I.
Wait, isn't that like the giant foot green guy thing from that one episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force? Or is he like with a Y and like 3 D's? I forget. I don't know. Anyway, last but not least, the realm of pop and electronic brings us a new album from Christina Perry with Songs for Carmella, Lullabies and Sing-Alongs. Megan Trainor with her newest project, Treat Myself. James Blake with his newest record, Assume Form. Toro Miwa with their newest project, Outer Peace. Mike Posner with his newest album, A Real Good Kid. and the comeback of the Backstreet Boys with DNA. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't all, you know, uneventful. I mean, shit, how could you say that when the Backstreet Boys are getting in at the start of the year? I mean, I assume, I don't know, I didn't listen to the album. Or a whole lot of Backstreet Boys, for that matter, in album context. But that's a completely unrelated discussion. Time to actually, you know, say, you know, goodbye to this month by actually talking about what it is from all of this stuff that we listen to. And as always, Alex is going to get things started.
Okay, just as a quick prelude, yeah, I didn't get around to listening to that new Backstreet Boys album. I'll probably get around to it in, like, whenever catch-up time comes around, because, yeah, fun fact, when I was a 6-year-old boy, I had the musical taste of a 14-year-old girl in the year 2000.
I have no comment.
Yeah, I was...
Okay.
Yeah, anyway... Yeah, I also did not listen to that surprise drop Weezer covers album, which, from what I hear, I didn't miss much of anything.
I got a few words.
Yeah, whatever. And as for Bring Me the Horizon and Papa Roach, well, who needs NyQuil when you got these albums?
Oh, boy.
Seriously, just fucking boring. Ugh. What the hell, guys? What the hell? But anyway, for what I did end up listening to this month, I got three albums with not too much to talk about, but enough to talk about. I'm going to start with this latest short album of Born of Osiris, The Simulation. So at 26 minutes, this is a pretty brisk jog of a listen with some solid work to it. It's pretty heavily Fatrin, which that just means there's more of the good stuff in there. Though Silence the Echo still sounds way too cut and paste for me to get into. It's just... It's just the way that those notes just cut off with that really sharp... I don't like it. I still don't like it.
Yeah.
The rest of the album, though, pretty solid. Especially the insane tech death sections in Disconnectome. I think that's how you say it. Or Tome. Disconnectome. Like Tome of Infinity or something. I don't know. And of course, I'm all about the super gent off-rhythm patterns in the start of Analogs in a Cell. I'm not too familiar with this band's backlog, so I'm just judging this, you know, for what it is as a standalone release within its own self-encompassing context. For what it's worth, yeah, good stuff I can get into. Overall, solid album. Not every track is a killer, though. Next up here, the debut album of Fever 333. Oh boy! If this isn't rapcore, it's definitely awesome new metal, but, you know, it is rapcore. That's what Strength in Numbers is. But it's good rapcore. Very good rapcore. And I'll just say, the line, "There's a motherfucking fever coming," is a great way to start any album, not just this. And hey, Prophets of Rage, I know you're working on that new album. Listen to this. This is what you're supposed to be doing. Hard hitting. Absolutely against the wall. To quote our boy Crash, it's got some oves, yo. Some oves. Yeah, we really got to do something about all this... Anyway, now, listening to all this play out in my ears, obviously, for one, the arrangement of the instruments, excellent, excellent, heavy. I want to call it new metal. I know it's not new metal, but this is new metal, okay? And it's very good new metal. Which makes you wonder, who's going to do more to revive the genre, these guys or Grimes? Guess we'll find out soon enough. Now, a lot of the lyrics on this album, they might come off as, they might come off in the way of, ooh, it's super tough, ooh, I'm scared. But I can honestly hear a sincere sense of realism in these tracks, especially in the two-part /3 tracks, Pray For Me /3, Eaglewood /3, and Out of Control /3. And more especially with Inglewood. This is a very interesting track that is really a tale of two tracks combined in one. The first half is somber, very low beat. It paints a really strong image of the vocalist's background growing up in, you know, the rough side of Inglewood, which, yeah, I can relate to that in a bit, considering my past, but whatever. Then the second half comes in. My God, it is a punch across the fucking skull, and I'm all for it. Well done. Very well done. Or as the lyrics say, you can fucking have it.
You can have it.
Yeah, very good.
There you go.
Now, the core of this album does give a very strong fuck all this bullshit vibe. Definitely with a lot of talk of social and political injustice and saying that, yo, fuck this. Time to shut it all down. And I can get behind that. For a debut album, this is a very strong leap out of the gate, and it's got me interested in what else these guys can cook up. Also, Travis Barker was the producer on this album.
Wow.
Yeah, just wanted to put it out there. Or at least on a couple of tracks of the album, anyway. Yeah. Good at least getting work. Oh, yep. Producer Travis Barker on the album. Cool. All right. And for my last big hitter of the month. Oh, boy. We have the first of four excellent prog albums coming out over a span of 4 months. We got Periphery coming out in April with Periphery 4. Hail Stan.
Hail Stan.
Goofy title, but I love it. We have Devin Townsend's Empath in March. We have Dream Theater's Distance Over Time coming out later this month. And we also have Neil Morse, and I should say the Neil Morse Band's The Great Adventure. It's not necessarily a sequel or a continuation to their prior album, The Similitude of a Dream, but it's more of an alternate perspective on that album's story. I'm not going to get too deep into it because that'll take me a lot of time, but it's sort of a concurrent A plot, B plot kind of thing going on here. It even starts off just sort of fool everyone into thinking it's going to be a sequel with a reprise of the final lyric on that last album, Let the Great Adventure Now Begin, with a good number of motifs brought back from that album into The Great Adventure. And of course, there is a good bit of 70s prog influence, as per usual, with this kind of stuff. Stuff influences like Kansas, Rush, ELP, Procol Harum. So I guess that'll mean late 60s prog as well, which is excellent in its own right. But this whole album sounds much heavier, with a much more of a darker edge to many of the tracks in terms of heavier guitars and darker lyrics. More foreboding, sinister lyrics, given the context of the lyrics and the storyline. Of course, you do have some poppier tracks, like one of the lead-off singles, Welcome to the World, and the one standout of the album in terms of absolute pop, what the heck's going on here with Vanity Fair? Not going to spoil it, but it goes places. It's worth noting that this album's not going to have any tracks included in the playlist because Mr. Neil Morris has decided to take up his own manifest destiny by controlling his own music and assuring that he gets paid for it. He actually has a deal with his record label for an app called Waterfall, which will give you unlimited access for a nominal fee to his entire backlog of music. Over 140 hours worth, so look it up if you want more.
Wow, 140 hours? That's how much time I've dumped into Smash Ultimate.
Yeah. Now, an album like this, a 2-CD, almost 2-hour-long album, it's going to take me a couple of listens to really get a good deep dive into and for me to get a definitive feel on it. But I will say, as a whole piece, this is yet another fantastic prog masterwork from Neil Morse and Company and Mike Portnoy. Yes, Mike, you're going to be on my Album of the Year list again this year. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's going to happen. So if you don't have access to, you know, any sort of sources that can get you this album in a quote-unquote legal way, you may as well buy it. If you love excellent prog, this is a very excellent album that's worth your money. So, make sure Neil Morse gets his money.
Yeah, because people got to get paid in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before everything goes to shit.
Yeah. And that's all I got. It was a light month, didn't have a lot to say, and yeah. Onwards to the next prog album of this month. So, 2 weeks away. Can't wait.
Yeah, could you imagine if it was just like that for every month of the year? Including months where it just kind of sneaks up on you?
Yeah.
Anyway, so with Alex's album discussion out of the way, now it's time to turn over to Mark and see everything that he was listening to in order to avoid future. You have the floor.
Yeah. Well, he said I did not listen to that future album because I don't give a shit. But yeah, like I said, this month it's been kind of like it's been me being reckless because like I've got like five I don't talk about, five, which then again it's 1 hour. But yeah, I'm gonna go by this kind of real quick. It's quicker than usual. First, let's go by this new album from Rabu Ken, aka Aesop Rock and Tobacco. Now, going into this album, I'm gonna admit, I never listened to A$AP Rock before. I mean, I listened to a couple of tracks here and there, but not a full album. And knowing that, you know, how he raps, you're thinking, what the hell is he saying? And you basically, it's like, look up Genius and see what he meant. And looks from Tobacco, which he's part of this, I think he's part of this band, he's a proper band, what's it called again? Because I was in my mind, but anyway, like, he collaborated with him before, and going to this album, like, I didn't have no expectations. I mean, it might be good, and honestly, I dig this a lot. Like, I did look at the lyrics a bit more, aka he was Genius, because I wanted to hear something about, like, on the first track, Corn Maze, where he's talking about Aesop, damn, I gotta keep make sure I don't say the wrong A. I said the wrong A thing, but yeah, he talked about him being you know a proud person, like he doesn't like being public all the time, like being part of society. He like doing his own thing. He likes, you know, sometimes he wouldn't like be in his household. Like, he wanna just, you know, watch some TV or on TV or eat cereal or if he gets a cat or something. But yeah, like talks about that along with the, you know, nature of popular culture, which, you know, expand on, you know, his antisocial ways, and yeah, like, it's pretty dope and kind of a relatable song, because you're somebody who, you know, is very private, which I did, because that's, you know, I'm a private man, I'm very private myself. I mean, I'll tell you shit, but not everything I do, but yeah, but that's on that. There was like a lot of, like, what, and also on the single Acid King, you know, the one with the weird music video, which I looked at what it about, which is the story of a guy named Ricky Queso who killed his friend in 1984 because they were on some acid, which, okay, that makes sense, because look at the lyrics again, where he says, the magic is black, backyard happy and fertile, for castle, the Acid King of the Black Circle, same year Bowie drop, hit two horns match mature and Newport's 84, here's an 84 merely written, it's like Ace Jeopardy, damn, that's a lot. Yeah, he does that better than me. I can't do what he do, but yeah, like I said, it's still pretty dope. Yeah, still pretty dope track with a very rare music video. Who I think the guy from King Star King, which I've heard his name, JJ Villar. Is it right? I'm thinking.
Yeah, JJ Villar. That's his name.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking. I wonder if he did that video because it seemed like something he would do. I don't know if he did, but it seems something he would do. But anyway, I will say this production is pretty dope here. Like, you've got this very futuristic synthy sounds. Like I said, I was asking, like, the whole 80s, like 80s cartoon type of production. Like, some here on the show, like, either like G.I. Joe or that old Rambo cartoon that exists. Yes, there's a Rambo cartoon that exists. Or, you know, some shit like that. My favorite beat on here is the one after Acid King called Suicide Big Gulp. With a very simple hip hop beat going around. And again, you know what the fuck he's talking about on here, because when you read something like A's like a different type of animal. No brick road, no zip code, Xanadu. Family hears the word army in the panic room before you meet the man. He's in the scramble suit. Glenn Tuttle's wicked bit of destiny meant to smell the witch up in the Vandals over Andy's with the Campbells. Andy Campbell, okay. That makes sense. I don't know. But okay. The point is like this. This is something that you obviously have to listen to a lot in order to get this shit. I'm just saying, like, if you did the music, which I did, and if you like what he said, like, it's a pretty dope track. It's a pretty good hip hop track, like the first starter group hip hop track of the year, which I would give ASAP. I mean, ASAP Rock. Fuck, I can't help him. Yes, I would give him. I'll give him and Tobacco some points. Points on this, because yeah, you got pretty dope. I'm right here. Yeah, I enjoyed that shit. Next up, we have Dawn with her album New Breed, and yeah, this is the first time I actually dug into a Dawn album, because like in my listen to her singles, I never dug into an album of hers before. I mean, again, I never
shame did on dug you, in. Mark.
Well, I didn't know who she was before. Okay, right there. Okay, anyway, like, I mean, after her, like, okay, she hails from New Orleans, and she got, which talks about, you know, her heritage, which, okay, I kind of dig what she does there. Like, she got a whole image of, you know, funk, soul, hip-hop on there. Like, you got her singles like Jealousy, you know, the one talked about where she talked about some girls just to her lover's ex or something like that, and you get some relationship shit, or you know, going around New Orleans, considering like she has a track, like it's like an intro outro, like the outro is called Ketchup and Po' Boys, which I guess it's those, you know, sandwiches you getting there. It sounds good, by the way, especially with some sauce, which, yes, the track's still good. And yeah, it's also easy to listen. Like, you got 10 tracks, 30 minutes. And if I'm wrong with her, it's her shortest album that she made.
Yeah, it's like 35 minutes. Usually she pushes like 50 or an hour.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess she wanna make a an out type of thing. But all the sounds sound good. They sound very, very creative. Much like her, doing, you know, versus R&B, and not to mention, you know, like, on the cover of the album, which she wears a headdress, which her heritage is from the Wichita Nation. I gotta dig what she had on here, and, alright, sounds kinda dope. Like, yeah, I probably listen to more of her albums, Yes, I know. Shame on me again. It probably smacked me with a hammer. Oh damn! I just spoiled a surprise. Don't hit me.
Oh wait! Don't hit you. Well, shit. That's already too late.
No. Okay, but yeah. I got nothing to say except that. Again, but that's just pretty good. You get some notes from people like Hudson Mohawk, Cold MGN, and Kev, yeah, I'm not gonna say that last thing because I might fuck it up, but yeah, it's still a pretty solid album. It's a pretty good album. I recommend it. Now, another album I want to talk to you about is Toto Imoi with his album Outer Peace, which, I'm looking at the artists that. This is the month of, like, I'm looking at all this music that I haven't heard before. Just dug in there. Yeah, it's gonna be that month. I think he's an artist that goes by the name of Chaz Bear. Chaz Bear. See what we read? Okay, fuck it. Anyway. I heard him on one song before. That's on a Travis Scott record, but that's another thing. Like, anyway, on this album, The Outer Peace, which I heard he does a lot of mixing genres with his albums, like He can do electronic or electronic R&B or all that shit. Like, he does, like, and he does a lot of, like, funky, synthy, wavy type of shit. And so to say, I don't say it'll sound good. I will say the auto-tune shit kind of gets, he does some auto-tune singing. It's okay, that's kind of, yeah, whatever, I'll take it. But it's like, it kind of gets dull for a minute. Some tracks I do like here. Miss B featuring Abra. Monte Carlo, like, kind of, I can fuck with a bit. And the last track, 50-50, which is my name, Instupido, I don't know. Instupido, this album is like, it's 10 tracks, which come to think of it. Let's see, Malibu Can, Dawn, this one. This is the third album on this list that got 10 tracks. And another 30 minutes.
What a coincidence.
I can say this, I enjoy some office on this album here. Like, it got a few house influence, electronic shit that I can dig, and it's pretty everything I would listen to for a while. I won't trigger every time. It's like, I wasn't like me like once like not once but 3 or 4 times, and like some tracks stuck me, some didn't. I will say it's a good background noise. It's a good background noise, but still something that would be to me that I checked out. But yeah, it's a pretty solid album. And now for an album that no one listed, because this one I just checked out just for a reason, because I heard something about the single in there, and that's an album from Boogie that's entitled Everything's for Sale. Now, no, I said Boogie, not the one with the hoodie. His name is just Boogie.
Man, there's a lot of these guys to keep track of. Have you considered coming up with some more unique names, like maybe 10k.cash?
Now, I was wondering, who the hell is he? Turns out he is a rapper from Compton who has his debut album this year. And he signed to Eminem Shady Records. Which got me worried, because how Eminem manages his artists. Why I say artists is, I keep my eye on you if you do wrong, if you do Griselda Records wrong. But anyway, with this album, the reason why I checked this out, because I heard much about the single Rainy Days, which features Eminem, and no surprise, Eminem's verse was trash. With lyrics, he says, "I let my legacy hurt, fuck it up, sir, like a shepherd having sex with a sheep. Fuck what you heard."
That's bad.
Yeah, that's really bad. And the worst thing about it is, that's the reason why people check this out, because that one song in that lyric, at least the guest verse lyric, and boy, wow, and he goes on and on and on and on, and I just don't care. But you know what? This ain't about Eminem. It's about Boogie. And what I think of this album, it's basically just, you got some introspective stuff. You got some bangers. Like, it's most of that. And some of them are alright. Alright, like, some of them are, you know, they're alright. Like, I like the first two tracks on there. Tyra Fletchins, that's track one, and Tell and Ride, which, okay, that's pretty okay. He does get better features. Like, he does get one track with Jid, which track is good, mostly because of Jid. Boogie's alright. I will say he's artist that, you know, he does have some melodic feel to him. Like, he does sometimes rap sings or sing rap, but come to think of the more this is the way he sounds, he sounds like he comes from Dreamville instead of Shady. And then you get songs like Skydive, which he goes on about. Let me get my notes here and He goes on about his unsureness and insecurities in a relationship where he, with Tamagito, you know, the commitment and shit. Hell, there's like two songs about like this. This guy that one and two featuring Black Six. I mean, Six Black. Six hey. Black.
The joke and, is his name is dumb and stupid.
Okay, and okay, okay other than that, though, man, I gotta say, except this album is, well, I say it's decent. I'm gonna say it's getting overlooked because like, I mean, people aren't gonna remember that. I'm just gonna remember that for that one song with that awful verse from that rapper that I'm not gonna give it to anymore because, yeah.
It's the hip hop dad jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is like this is War of His Records. I said, like, okay, he seems like a decent rapper. Thing is, like, he's a good rapper, but he's not really what I call definitive. He's just, he might blend in with this. He's, sounds like that. He sounds like this. Once again, I probably, it was on the Fantano scale, I give it orange plaid, or I don't know, someone between the orange plaid. It's like, it ain't bad. I wouldn't give it the yellow plaid either.
Isn't it flannel, though?
Oh, flannel. Why I said plaid? I'm just trying to get my head together. Jeremy's still foggy. Like that's how you get like a month off of doing these. Anyway, last one I'm gonna talk about, the one I actually did a review of because, well, that's what I did this month. The new album from James Blake titled Assume Form. And there's another motif. Another album from an artist who was the first time I jumped into some of his solo stuff because, yes, even though he's been big last year with even feature and stuff like, you know, the Black Panther soundtrack, being Bloody Waters and King's Dead, he was on Travis Scott's record with the song Stop Trying to Be God, and he did some of the Dungeon or the Runches for Never's album Age of last year. And also, people work with, you know, hip-hop a lot. Like, he's been working with stuff for Beyonce, Frank Ocean, Jay-Z, a lot of them. And going to this album, you know, Assume Form, it doesn't have a taste for anything. Like, you get some, like, ambient stuff, some ethereal singing of his, you get some trap shit, which, yes, you know, shit. And I gotta say, he got a good ear for production. Getting that the trap shit I mentioned, he gets a bunch of booming for two tracks, which you got Mount High with Travis Scott and Tell Him with Moses Sumney. And I say this, I prefer the latter. I like Tell Him better than Mount High because Mount High sounds like something of the Astro World cut. And Tell Him is something, maybe because I like Moses Sumney singing better on there. That's just me. But yeah, I actually dug out a lot about it. And of course, the biggest thing about this album, or at least the biggest thing that catches your eye, is he has a verse, he got a guest verse in the form of Mr. Three Stacks himself, Andre 3000, on the track Where's the Catch? And the catch is, yeah, it's my favorite track of the album, which is no duh, which I like where... Like it's the piano, the vocal effects, the guitar sound, and the hi-hats, the vocal delivery where it goes, where's the catch? There must be a catch. Okay, I gotta sing that a little bit, like, okay, it's a good track. What's his album? He does have, like, he has that experimental ambient sound, which I can get into, like, there's tracks I like in there, like, Into the Red, I'm in Love, Don't Miss It, and the closing track, Let About From My Insomniac, which has this very haunting sound where it goes like, Which I'm not gonna do that sound because I sound terrible at it, but it sounds like a very haunting sound. Which if you play at night, you kind of feel that haunted dread of it. And I will say the album is fairly good. I will say no tracks I found are bad. I just wanted to just gloss over. Like it's like the one song Barefoot in the Park where it was all there, which is good. It's good. It's a good track, but I go for the other ones more. It's like, was it a dad or about from my Insomniac or Where's the Catch? Like I'll go with them two than the others, but yeah, like the vocal, like I said for Love About from my Insomniac, it has the best vocal, the best vocalization from him and where, and that was my cat trying to get the mic. You cursed me,
bad kitty. Go to the corner.
And I will say, even though I gave this a 3.5, I kind of like this a bit more. We're going back to it. Probably give like a maybe a 4 or something, but well, out of 5, by the way, in case y'all wondering what I made at. But yeah, it's not a better start. It's not better to start the year with me in this like a smooth form of being a good record I can listen to. Like you get a blend of ambient sounds, electro pop vibes, and trap shit, which. It's really worth looking into. It's a pretty good. It's a pretty good album. And with that, sadness of water.
Yes, go get your water and then discipline your cat. Wow, to think, is that the first time that's happened in like the entire run of recording this show?
I don't know. I think you tried a couple of times, but I think it wasn't that noticeable.
Cats. But anyway, with that out of the way, now, of course, is the last third of this, where I, of course, get to chime in with everything I listen to. And even in this desert of a month, I still found plenty of things to listen to, but only really like 2 top picks. Of those, we're getting started right now. So the first of these was one that I saw bandied about quite a bit on the, punk and metal blogs and everything, with a pretty heavy push courtesy of the label, I believe it was Prosthetic Records. And that is, of course, this debut album from the band Wrist Meat Razor, all one word, called Misery Never Forgets. I mean, I had to find something, something to help me out here with this month. And man, I gotta tell you, as someone who's still riding, the waves of that Vain record from last year, this is filling my soul right here. The angsty, screamo kid soul that still exists within at some level. Coming, right out of the gate with the song Loathsome, with that similar kind of Vain style where it's that heavy, steady, chugging riff that bounces off against these, really, ear-piercing, squealing chord progressions. Kind of stopping ahead with, very shredding, throat-shredding vocals. A lot of those more, panicked, screamo, distressed vocal passages. And those, staccato, higher-pitched chord progressions. And a lot of those, kind of like almost like 90s, proto metalcore-ish sort of grooves, like on the song In Line for Halos, with a lot of its more rhythmically off-kilter elements as it's just aggressively stomping forward, kind of like in a pseudo-coalesce kind of sense, along with this kind of brief spoken word passage where the screamo influence comes in more fully, kind of like touches of Circle Takes the Square, or I guess in this case more William Bonney in a sense. All of that, especially on the song Come In The Water's Pink, because the album, is pretty much, pummeling, hard-hitting, in-your-face for, the first few tracks, but then when it gets to there, it becomes a more slow, sort of somber dirge of a song with more intensely mournful vocal melodies that kind of break up, the overall pacing. There's still those hard-hitting, aggressive chugs and the squealing and the cleans and everything on tracks like Insecurity Checkpoint, and, XOXO Love Letter from a Loaded Gun, with more of that Vain influence, especially with the hard-hitting blast beats and shit, with some more elements that are almost kind of more like Jerome's Dream, especially the album track Expiry Date 12 Hours. That is this album at its most snarling, with its buzzing, cutting riffs, screeching, dissonant guitar melodies. It's really, just hard-hitting D beats and everything, and it's just very immediately, viscerally satisfying, and it's a pretty convenient listen. 9 tracks, 20 minutes long. Trust me, you could get some replay value out of this, man. And then, of course, for the other top pick, one that Mark already mentioned from an artist that I actually do have some working knowledge of. That's right. It's Aesop Rock. Hey, you thought I was going to say Dawn. Eh. But, yeah, I actually have listened to quite a bit of Aesop Rock. You know, I consider myself something of a fan of his walls of bars, even if I can only make sense about 10% of, like, what he's saying in any given album. But, yeah, you know, this new project with Tobacco, the Malibu Ken release, and, yeah, that creepy music video that is also the album art, which, now that I think about it, kind of looks more like a background character in Mr. Pickles. But that's just my opinion.
Oh.
Yeah, now you had to think about that show. So, yeah, I didn't really know what to expect from this Tobacco fellow. I mean, I'm guessing from the lead single, they kind of had, like, a very, like, synthy, computerized kind of sound. And it's kind of what you get listening to the production on this album as a whole. All the beats are, like, these very computerized, kind of almost, at times, chiptune sort of quality. It's certainly a more unique sound than the kind you usually get on Aesop's albums. And it makes a pretty, you know, they're usually, like, catchy enough, but also sparse enough to, like, carry his very dense walls of rhymes. Like, on the song Tuesday, where the chorus is just this, you know, really synthetically processed vocal delivery, like, it has, like, this unusually numbing, like, sense about itself. That kind of plays off well against, like, his bars, which, I'll give the album this. This is probably the most I've been able to understand an Aesop Rock album lyrically in pretty much ever. Like, the song Tuesday itself, it's about, like, the sort of disorderliness of his own life and just how much of a wreck it can be at times, which, you know, is not off base from stuff he's rapped about before, but I feel like the message comes through clearly, even when he's rapping weird shit about, like, fucking disgusting mushrooms growing in his car that are, like, freaking out the neighbors and shit. You know, from desolate to little shop of horrors in a second about how he says it. And then, of course, there's the song Swordbox, which has plenty more of those video gamey bleeps and blips, lending themselves to this really, like, lyrically dense song about, like, where he's kind of comparing, like, you know, sort of other musicians and rappers and whatnot to kind of, like, these magicians, like, these sort of, you know, stage performers, and kind of implying that they're scam artists. Like, as the chorus itself goes, "And for my next trick, I'll make a dollar bill climb up out your wallet, disappear and reappear inside my pocket. I never really do these things twice, but if y'all ask nice, I just might." And then, of course, the, you know, centerpiece of the album for us, Acid King, which, it's probably one of the more interesting beats overall. Again, it's pretty minimal with, like, just that, you know, really saturated bassy, you know, kind of bleep and blip all across. But it's mostly percussionless, save for, like, you know, after Aesop Rock's done rapping and everything. And it kind of carries this, like, disorienting haze to it, kind of like you actually are on acid yourself, as it's relaying the story of this, you know, just air quotes, lovely sounding Ricky Casso fellow. June 16th, Casso snaps, off guard Gary tackling the pin, sees Rick pull a knife from his jacket and grin, raise that knife like a sword to the moon, plunge that knife through a portrait of youth, going, "Say you love Satan, say you love Satan." Lawyers ain't say, it just caved to the facelift, 32 stab wounds, gouged out eyes, burns on his skin, no cloud in the sky. Casso had later explained he was told by Satan in the form of a crow to murder the kid called. Yeah, he, in case you can't tell, he likes to be very dense with his bars. But again, it's at least I understand what's going on, which in a way probably makes it the most accessible album he's done in quite a while. So if you've heard lots about this Aesop Rock guy and you're looking for a good place to jump on, give this album a listen and, you know, then proceed with caution to the rest. I mean, I heard The Impossible Kid has a song about his cat named Kirby. And isn't that just an adorable name for a cat? So, yeah, that basically covers my two big highlights. And now for a bit of a quick round here. So, starting off with Lil Ake, or Lil Lake, Memory Lies. I'll say, imagine this sort of intersection between, like, Deftones-style songwriting and kind of vocals and drum grooves, sort of in the style of Periphery. I say that because the drummer of this band, Eric Moore, is one of those that I follow on Instagram, and he very much takes after the Matt Halpern school of modern prog metal drumming. So, if those type of grooves are your thing, I'd say this one does pretty okay for itself. Then moving on to Dawn's New Breed. one of her more straightforward albums, I'd say. Again, you can pretty much tell from the fact that it's her shortest overall, and it does leave you wanting more, but she's still a damn good singer, and she can, you know, churn out some really excellent R&B music. Of course, after that comes Soilwork's Verklighetin, which, you know, is another Soilwork album, pretty heavy on... Definitely heavy on the soaring vocals, which, you know, to be fair, their singer Bjorn Strid, I hope I'm saying that right, he nails them perfectly. But admittingly, the song structures and the riffing styles feel more like active rock radio than anything else, backing off a bit from the more kind of thrashier, aggressive heaviness in parts. So take that with a grain of salt, but hey, it still provides a solid enough listen. And of course, last but not least, sounds like I'm the guy that listened to the Teal album in full, and, I don't hate it. The Paranoid cover, I'll admit, is probably the best song on here, although it's probably because Rivers didn't do the vocals on it. But why did they have to cover No Scrubs? You ain't no TLC, Rivers. And it's just weird hearing those lyrics come out of you. Yeah. Oh well, at least we still have the meme-tasticness of the Africa cover. And, you know, I imagine, you know, the Black album is going to let me down, so I can at least re-listen to the Paranoid cover again and again. Kind of makes me wish they would do a Maladroit Part 2. But anyway, moving on from that, now we have to get into the lowlights, of which I have three. Starting off with a band that Alex talked about, that of course I actually am a bit familiar with, that is Born of Osiris with The Simulation. Yeah, you know, for the record, if you've never listened to Born of Osiris's, I'm trying to remember the name of their second album, The Discovery. That album is still excellent. It is peak cosmic techie genty core type of thing. And from what I've heard, apparently this album is not the first one. It's not the only one they're coming out with this year, rather, because I guess Sumerian's doing like the BT BAM thing as well and having them do two albums. Hence why this one is at least, thankfully, a lean 25 minutes. But, yeah, the opening track and the first single, The Accursed, did not make a good impression on me. Like, you know, theoretically, it sounds like it's there. I mean, there's those really aggressive, steady guitar chugs, the really, you know, densely, like, saturated synth melodies and everything. But it just kind of monotonously, like, thuds against your senses, and the vocal delivery is just kind of... bland and predictable. Like, in fact, I think it's because of the synths especially. There's something about them that sounds a little, like, okay, I know synthetic is innate with a band like Born of Osiris, but this just kind of sounds like the Asylum version of whatever the actual Born of Osiris album was supposed to be. And, you know, that definitely continues more with the super, like, corny synthcore fodder of, like, Cycles of Tragedy, which, you know, kind of tries to mix it up with, like, blast beats and the drums and everything, but it's still marred by just the clicheness of the composition. And, you know, songs like Analogs and A Cell kind of try with, like, a bit more dynamic noodling and riffs, and I will say Disconnect Tome, or Disconnect to Me, I'm not entirely sure of the pronunciation myself. It is the best track on the album, I'll give it that. It has much more satisfying, techie, you know, dense riffs and guitar noodlings with its more dense drumming. But when you get right down to it, it almost kind of feels more like a B-side from, like, The Faceless or Allegion or something. And, oh dear fucking God, don't get me started on Under the Gun. That was the worst track on the album to me. Just because, like, the synths don't at all sound like they're trying to be spacey and cosmic. Instead, it sounds like mediocre J-pop. Like it sounds like if you took an instrumental from Kiari Pamu Pamu and dumped a whole bunch of, like, you know, Sumerian core sludge on top. Blech. But, you know, at least it's 25 minutes, and, oh dear God, how long is the other album gonna be? Guess we'll have to wait and see. Then moving on to the second lowlight for the month, one of two bands I have to talk about who have been bitten by the Imagine Dragon. And first up is Papa Roach with Who Do You Trust? Fun fact, this is actually the first time I've ever listened to a Papa Roach album in full. Yes, I'm dead serious about that. I was somehow lucky enough to dodge the albums. Up until this point, anyway. So, yeah, lucky fucking me, eh? And, despite that, though, when I was listening to this album, at least for the first four tracks, it kind of matched up with what my mental image of them had always been based on, you know, the big singles we all know about them. You know, the opening tracks have, like, these, you know, accompanying synths in the choruses and everything that kind of back those anthemic, like, vocals with pseudo-rhythmic white guy rapping with the occasional scream in there, you know. But then you have, like, the track Elevate, which kind of has, like, these annoying whoas. Like, you know, like, you have the, you know, more standard Papa Roach first four tracks, then Elevate track five, where everything goes straight Imagine Dragons, like, mashed up with, like, fucking, like, mid-2000s rap beats and shit. Oh, dear God. And I know, I say mid-2000s because of all the horns. We all know you can't have good rap instrumentals without horns. Then, of course, there's the song Come Around, which kind of feels like, it's like something you would find on the iPod of, like, the quote-unquote cool youth camp counselor. You know, the guy that drinks Mountain Dew because, you know, it's kind of like the blood of Jesus, man. Or something like that. That same thing goes for, like, tracks like Feels Like Home and even Problems, which is the most explicitly, like, Imagine Dragons, which, again, seriously, why do people want to imitate that band so bad? They suck! They're the new Nickelback!
Money, that's why.
They make money.
They make money. You know, I'll give the album this. There was one surprise, and that was the track I Suffer Well, which it's a pretty lean out minute and 20 seconds, you know, pretty classic 90s punk sound, like kind of like the Offspring's first two albums or like Pennywise. And I guess I like it more than the other ones just because it's the only one that feels like it has a pulse, even if it's obviously regurgitating trends from, you know, eras and bands that are much better than these guys are. But that doesn't change the fact that it still forces you to listen to at least half an album's worth of bleh. Yeah, jeez. Talk about a first experience, eh? Okay, time to get to the big lowlight here. The band that I actually do have a bit of a history with here as well, and that is Bring Me the Horizon with Amo. Now, I've been following this band since about 2010. I remember a music blog I used to follow that I'm, you know, still acquaintances with some of the staff there, and one of the reviewers gave their album There Is a Hell a 5 out of 5. And I was like, okay, I'm interested, I gotta check this out. And I quite liked it. Shit, it's probably one of the best albums that the Warped Tour scene, you know, ever really produced. And the funny thing is, none of their other material really resonated with me in the same way. Like, their first album was, like, just straight deathcore. Their second album was kind of the transition point. Their third album, you know, the There Is a Hell one, that one kind of found the right balance of, like, aggressive metalcore and, like, the more, you know, pristine, you know, clean melodic productions and everything and songwriting. Sempiternal was kind of a letdown because I feel like none of the material stuck with me as hard. And I said the same thing with That's the Spirit. But somehow this one is even lamer, because this is the point where they finally go full goddamn pop. And electronica as well, especially from the intro, I Apologize If You Feel Something. And this is how I know I was going to be in for a bad sign, because this opening track sounds like if the producer Igloo Ghost was being extremely generous and undiscerning with who he handed out beats to. It's literally that same kind of, like, wonky kind of electronic production style, and I'm like, you know, I could be listening to Igloo Ghost right now. He had two EPs out last year, and they were both pretty damn good. But I'm not. I'm listening to this. Then, of course, oh, by the way, that same thing applies for the album interlude, Ouch. How appropriate. And then it segues into, we already talked about the single Mantra, which is just this slow, sludgy riff with, like, no, very little, like, in terms of momentum, the annoying poppy production and everything, and, you know, Ollie Sykes friggin' singing, which just sounds so impassionate half the time for the sake of sounding moody and emotional. Then, of course, the rest of the album is like that, really. You get, like, In the Dark with its, you know, twangy guitars against this kind of a clicking trap snare segueing into real drums. It sounds like a bad 2000s R&B instrumental with, you know, more guitar distortion, of course. And, you know, it's making me want to listening to this album, I almost want to gravitate to some of the quote-unquote heavier songs on the album, like Wonderful Life with its more buzzy syncopated riffs and everything. But you know, the distortion effects and the style of riffing specifically, it sounds like you're listening to the same riff from song to song, regardless of what, like, the tempo is or anything. In fact, with how it syncopates and just the level of saturation, it sounds like, you know, to use the Asylum comparison again, this sounds like the Asylum version of a Tesseract album when it's trying to get heavy. And no, shame on you, I could be listening to Tesseract. And for the record, the presence of Danny Filth of Cradle of Filth on the song Wonderful Life doesn't really help things much. I guess technically the song Sugar, Honey, Ice, and Tea tries the hardest to sound like a hard rock jam at the very least, but again, the numbing, droning riff, and especially the annoying, squealing, processed vocal effects when it's like, you're so full of sugar, honey, ice, and tea.
What the fuck?
God, fuck, it's hurting my throat.
What the hell?
God, and just for the record, sugar, honey, ice, and tea, is that like an alcoholic beverage or something? Or is that like some, you know, mother's remedy for shit? Like, I don't fucking know. Fucking Fresh Bruises just drifts through mediocre pop ambience, while the song Mother Tongue is the most explicit of the Imagine Dragons influence, and it sounds almost exactly as banal as anything Maroon 5 has put out in the past few years. And of course, there's the dick tease of the song Heavy Metal, where only the pat last 5 seconds of it have anything that sound like metal in the slightest. Talk about a fucking dick tease. And for some reason, there's guest vocals and beatboxing from Razelle, who, if that name sounds familiar, he was a former member of The Roots.
Wait, that Razelle? Okay.
Yes, that Razelle, Mark. Damn. I don't know what he's doing here.
Damn.
He is too good for this, and so is Danny Filth, and so is Grimes, for that matter. By the way, here's a quick tangent related to the Grimes thing. I know this is going to sound weird, but I have a point to make here. So I was looking up some shit about this album, and, you know, some tangentially related stuff throughout the Twitters, and I found out a really interesting fact through browsing Twitter and reading the description. For the song that Grimes guests on, Nihilist Blues, there was actually like this visualizer slash lyric video. And the director of photography on that video is a man named Quentin Mirabit. He is a French actor and director. And you might be wondering why I'm bringing that up. Well, okay, remember how I said this past month or so I was re-binging the series Code Lyoko, and I may have also mentioned that at some point after the original run, they made a sequel series that substituted the 2D animation for live-action actors? Well, Mr. Mirabit is the guy who played live-action Ulrich. And no, he does not have the giant forehead of Doom, but he is in a relationship with Melanie Tran, the actress who played Yumi on the same show. Now, I bring this up for one of three reasons. A, I'll admit, the video itself is actually pretty visually interesting with, like, its weird neon VHS distortion sort of thing. Second, the fact that those two are in a relationship is just heartwarming, isn't it? It kind of feels like it brings some closure to the unresolved romantic tension from my childhood. I mean, jeez, I can't believe they never fucking kissed despite all the obvious, you know, close shots. I mean, shit. I'll say whatever I want to about something like Inuyasha, but at least that show had Inuyasha and Kagome kissing at the end. It didn't blue ball the fan base on it. And my third reason for bringing this up is because this album is so godforsakenly boring, I'd rather be thinking about anything else other than the actual music on it, including weird tangents related to shows I watched as a kid.
I have the biggest grin on my face right now. You have no idea.
And that is basically all I have to say on this album. I don't know if it's going to be, like, say, something I put on a worst of the year list, just because I want so terribly to forget about it. And it is, it's a bit forgettable in and of itself. I wouldn't remember most of it if it weren't for these notes and the weird tangent. But, goddamn, just go away. I mean, and I'm not just saying this as, like, oh, like, I think it's bad because it changed. No, it changed into something that was not good. This album is bad because it's boring. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. If you look up the sales records, you'll find that it dropped 75% from where their last album was.
Damn. Yeah.
That's the sound of sales imploding on itself. I mean, granted, nobody buys albums anymore, but even with combined metrics, that's not a good sign.
Jesus, here's hoping Quentin Mirabeau got a good paycheck for, you know, that directing job, because, yeah, Lord knows Bring Me the Horizon might not be getting much of one. So, yeah, that's basically all I have to say about this past month. February's got to pick up a little bit more, at the very least. I mean, come on, we're getting a new Dream Theater. If that doesn't pick up the slack, I don't know what will. So, thank you all for listening to all this. You know, all the links and stuff you can find down in the description. Of course, join us for the next episode and everything. You know when that's all happening. And of course, remember to check, you know, the playlist down in the description for songs from the albums that we're talking about. So, yeah, it's basically about it for the January album roundup. See you next time. But first, Mark, watch out for that skateboard.
Hey, what?